what happened to me at work gave me a second chance to be a better husband, a better dad, a better person, and still make an impact in some form or fashion. I should have been dead that day. There's no doubt in my mind. I shouldn't be here talking to you. So I know there's more purpose for me.
Hey guys, check out the 2023 Street Cop Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, Gaylord Convention Center. It's going to be the event of the year. Keynote speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, Navy SEAL Jason Redmond, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Marine Corps Special Forces and Leadership Coach Cody Alford, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff David Clark, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. It's going to be one hell of an event. And on top of that, we have all of our instructors and additional instructors from other companies going to be at the event, giving you everything they know for you to have a successful career and get the results you want to get in the field as a police officer. On top of attending the event, you'll get face-to-face time with every instructor attending the event, and all the keynote speakers will spend time with you. We got special events all week, giveaways, nightlife. It's going to be really, really worth your time, energy, and effort. I promise you, you will not regret it for a second. To register for the conference, check out streetcop.com, click conference, and everything you need will be there on the homepage. If you are looking for a room, just click book a room. The block has been sold out at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center, but there are many hotels nearby within a walking distance of the event. You don't want to miss out on this opportunity. We will see you there. Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. And when I say this, I realize that I have to start looking at the camera because I wasn't before. So thanks for telling me, Frank, because I actually watched one of our episodes recently. I'm like, I should really look at the camera when I say this. But we have today with us Mark Preeb. Is it Preeby or Preeb?
Preeby.
Preeby. I'm not the only person that fucks that up, Mark. Let's face facts.
No. Yeah, it's messed up name, so.
No, it's not that bad, dude. We've had some real interesting characters on here. But we had your wife and son on prior to this. And Mark was significantly injured in the line of duty. He's here to tell us his story and his journey and where he's at now and what that was like beforehand and after. So, you know, man, it's just always a pleasure. And we're always thankful when somebody who has been through an experience like you've been through comes forward and has a conversation about it to help others prepare. God forbid they endure something similar. So thanks for being here, dude.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you having me on and always glad to tell my story. And we've been pretty transparent from the get-go, so we answer any and all questions and do as much as we can to help others. So
maybe you can give us a little insight as to who you are, where you're from, where you grew up, when you got into law enforcement, and then we'll lead right into the incident that unfolded.
Okay. Mark Preeby, I was born in Detroit, Missouri, as a baby, left there pretty quick. My dad worked for General Motors, and he transferred a lot, so didn't live there long until later on in my high school years, where I graduated out of a suburb there in Michigan. But started college out on the West Coast and or East Coast, and just wasn't for me. So I came back home. Well, mom and dad had moved from home. So the new home was in Missouri, in a small town called Mount Vernon, Missouri. And so when I came back, that's where I moved in back in with them. And I knew I wanted to be a cop, but realizing really quick the school wasn't for me at this level, that I was just going to work until I could get old enough to get an academy under my belt. But anyways, so just prior to turning 21, I put myself through back then it was in the mid 90s. So it was 300-hour police academy for us, and put myself through that part time and worked full time and then started putting applications out, got hired on in another small town in Southwest Missouri called Aurora, and worked there for 3 years, got to meet some Springfield cops, which Springfield is the third largest city in the state of Missouri. And it's down in Southwest part of the state. So met some Springfield cops through my stuff there and working in Aurora. And when I hit that 3 year mark, one of them had actually talked to me about applying for Springfield. Springfield's big enough to have their own academy. We're about, even back then, I think we're in the 150,000 range, so it's not huge, but So applied for Springfield, got hired on, started in that their police academy, which is well over 1,000 hours back in 99, started in May of 99 at 21 years old. Well, back then it was, I guess I was 23, 24 back then. So pretty young, had met my wife when I was working in Aurora. You guys talked about her, and she and my son Connor have been on the podcast, and met her while she was a EMT on an ambulance for one of the local hospitals in Southwest Missouri, and got married in 99 right after I got started. And we were kind of doing the married thing and not seeing each other much because she worked shift work and I was working every shift. And so anyways, got to do quite a few different things as a Springfield cop. Prior up to my injury, I was there 21 years. So worked the road for a long time and night, working nights, which I really liked. Got to work several different squads, how things were here in our department. So got to know a lot of the veteran officers through that, working that shift, and got luckily had some really good supervisors, especially early on, that and squad mates that helped guide me. So I learned a lot in a small town, but it's a lot different than working in a big city, and was able to kind of expand upon my 3 years in that small town and really lucky to have people to kind of guide me and lead me working at a bigger department. So worked in patrol for quite a while, moved on to work in what we called our COP, unit, community oriented policing. Worked down our downtown, which we still have a square. A lot of places don't have a square. We have a square, but it's more a bar district and businesses, especially now. So I worked there for about a year. We would work pretty much walk downtown for the most part. Worked Wednesday through Saturday when the bars were open, 5 to 2 or 3 in the morning, depending on what we were doing. And I got to do that for a while, a lot of fighting. So it was good for my early years, but got tired of dealing with drunks, man. So I got back out of that, went back to patrol, worked in patrol for quite a while and back in nights. And then kind of getting burnt out, ended up switching shifts to day shift. Because my wife and I were starting to talk about having a family, and the schedule was a lot better back then for days than it was for nights, obviously. So did that for a while, transferred in and out of a couple other sections. I worked another couple stints in community services, which is the COP unit. They just kept changing names. You know how departments are. They seem to change things all the time. I was lucky enough to work in our traffic unit later in my career. And spent several years there learning to be a motor cop and work fatalities and doing some reconstruction stuff. I think the best part of that for me was learning how to be a motor officer. And that training was probably some of the hardest mentally and physically I've had in all my time. But really enjoyed that. Got to do some motor escorts for dignitaries and some important people over those few years. And then at the very tail end of my career, I was back in community services in two different spots. But my last one just prior to my injury was a crime prevention officer. So I got to deal with our neighborhood watch groups, our citizen groups a lot, interact with them. I had been involved with our Special Olympics through our law enforcement torch run, I'm sure some of you guys have heard about that. A lot of departments are involved in that, and they fundraise for their Special Olympics within their state. But so I've been involved in that for over 10 years, and being in the community services unit, that gave me a lot more time during my work time to be able to help on those things and organize and plan. So, but got to do a lot of good things within those units and working within the law enforcement torch run groups. I got sent over to Abu Dhabi for World Summer Games back in 2019. We were the law enforcement torch run. We ran. We had several different teams, and we ran through the Emirates prior to them starting the World Games, which is a pretty cool experience. Never been anywhere outside of the U.S. before, and that was definitely a interesting place. So, but that leads up to, I was working and doing that job just before my injury, probably March. We had not had an officer killed in the line of duty in a long time. We had an officer that was shot and had to medically retire because he had a TBI from getting shot in the head. That was probably the worst that I had seen in my career within people that I knew in my department. But in March of 2020, we had a nutbag that decided to go around driving around shooting up things and shooting at things. Ended up at one of our gas station convenience stores, one of our big chains that we have in the Springfield Southwest area. Shot one person outside the store, went in the store, and it was late at night or early in the morning. Killed a clerk or two, some innocent civilians that were in there. Of course, our officers were responding. Ended up one of our officers, Chris Walsh, was shot and killed. And that's when Josiah Overton was there with him at that incident. And Josiah was shot and wounded. And a lot of you guys that follow Street Cop and the podcast stuff have probably seen him and know about him. But he survived and is still working at the PD. That leads up to right after that and dealing with all that and all of our department and our community going through that, because it was a pretty hard time for us and a dark time. That leads up to COVID, pre-COVID, right as COVID was starting. And then some of our, what a lot of departments and cities were seeing were the riots because of the George Floyd stuff. For us, they weren't riots, not near as bad. Compared to what a lot of departments were dealing with, and a lot of the bigger cities were dealing with, Kansas City, St. Louis, all over the United States. But they, their peaceful protests were blocking our roadways and major thoroughfares in a couple spots several times. So my unit, because we were so flexible and the people that worked in it didn't have set schedules, we got tasked with a lot of that stuff to help with patrol and our SRT guys and gals and stuff. So we got cast into that, dealing with that stuff that I hadn't seen before. You know, we get called names and spit on and assaulted and everything and throughout our careers. We've been there, done that. But this was different, especially when you just have people yelling and screaming at you because of the uniform you're wearing, calling you names. It was a different vibe for me, especially that late in my career. So we dealt with that. We had a big march the weekend prior to my injury that was planned. Luckily, we were able to have a stake in meeting with the groups that were organizing that. So we hopefully would have some better intel and be prepared. So I was in the middle of that within my unit, planning and organizing all of our people and our county sheriff, the sheriff's department that was assisting us, our highway patrol, and all of the people at our department. Well, lo and behold, I'm thrust in the middle of all of the bosses. I was one of the only ones that really had done within my unit had dealt with special events and special ops stuff as far as operational plans and stuff. So I got tasked with organizing that on the paperwork side of it and reaching out and getting information from each section and people that were going to be involved. And so I was literally in the middle of that planning. That went off without a hitch. Luckily, we were pretty fortunate. I think that was on a Saturday, Sunday, and our unit, pretty much most of us, especially my sergeant and I, took Monday off. I spent the day with my daughter, had a good day with her. I was in a pretty dark place right around then. I was struggling in my marriage really bad. Heather and I were not getting along. In fact, the Sunday before my injury, we probably had the worst. And if you heard her podcast, she'll say the same thing. Had the worst fight that we've ever had in our 21 years, or almost 21 years, being married. So I just was burnt out. I was in a bad place. Was not, my kids didn't want me to be around. My wife didn't want me to be around. I was a complete asshole and just treating everybody like dirt and not letting anybody in.
Why do you think that was happening from the job?
A lot of it was the job, and I was just struggling. I just had enough with even the basic stuff that I was dealing with. I mean, my job at the time I had been doing for quite a while, and I had, everything was running smooth, and I kind of had a schedule and things organized and wasn't stressing, but I was just tired of it all. Tired of dealing with citizen groups that wanted to complain and stuff. And don't get me wrong, our community down here in Southwest Missouri is very pro-police. And I'll talk about that when after my post injury stuff and how they stood up for me. But it just, you know, the grind of dealing with the negative and seeing the negative. You know, I was part of the response team for when Walsh was killed, and I wasn't directly investigating or on that, but I had equipment out there that I was operating for those guys and gals, and was inside the scene a little bit. I went to an autopsy for one or two of the involved parties. So, I mean, and not that I had done that stuff before. It wasn't a big deal, but that was different for me. I didn't know Walsh hardly at all. I knew who he was, but didn't ever work with him, obviously, being in the unit I was in. I just, that and going through his funeral, starting to get to know Josiah, that was kind of more post injury for me, but knowing him and what he was somewhat going through at the time, I think, and everything was kind of focused on Walsh, which it should have been, in his family, but Overton kind of got left out, him and Abby. But anyway, I was just in a dark place, and I think a lot of it was mostly work related. And like I said, I mean, every marriage struggles, but for some reason, because of my issues at work, I think that just made home life 1,000 times worse. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know
what would
know
you
how
say
bad
to somebody. I mean, dude, like, before we get into the whole thing, what would you say to somebody who is listening to this and hearing you speak and saying, fuck, that's me? What would you tell them before, like, it gets that bad?
Get help. You know, I was always that guy that there was always somebody worse, and I didn't need counseling. And we'd never done marriage counseling. I mean, we had our fights and stuff, but nothing crazy. You know, I didn't have alcohol issues, drug issues. For the most part,
that's what you were telling yourself, right? You're probably telling yourself, I'm not this guy. I'm not that guy.
Yeah, totally. And, so thinking that, you know, everybody especially people on the outside that don't truly know you, everything looks good. And until you truly be honest with yourself and open up, I think it's hard to see what everybody else can see, especially those close to you, your wife, your kids, your parents, maybe depending on the circumstances. And maybe a few close friends that are willing to stand up and say, hey man, what's going on? What the hell? And so there's embarrassment that goes with that. And I'm still learning. That's something I'll talk about post-injury. I'm still learning. There's good times, and then there's going to be some bad times, not so good. And then there's going to be some shit ass, just crappy times. And as you deal with stuff, but it's how you deal with it. It's willing to accept, if it's yourself, if it's a situation you're in, whatever, is accepting that and then figuring out how to fix it. And Heather and I we talked about it, and it was like the same thing over and over and over again. It was the same kind of fight over the same bullshit. And there was no rhyme or reason. We talked, we need to get counseling, but me as the man of the house or whatever you want to say, we never took those steps to go, okay, how can we better communicate? What I am finding is communication is the key, is being open, being willing to communicate. If you need the help, go ask for the help. Luckily here, and I didn't know this till post-injury, because things, when I started, man, you suck it up. You don't talk about your feelings. You know, and I was young and impressionable. I had zero life experience. I didn't go to college. I was in private school before that, so I wasn't in public school. I think, not that that was bad or wrong, but that's a different environment. Until I became a cop at 21, as a young man, living on my own and no longer living with mommy and daddy, I had to grow up really quick. So, and seeing the things that you start to see even at those early stages of your career, what I'm learning after training and experiences that I've post-injury is that that stuff gets stuffed away in your brain, in your head, and you think you're fine and you move on. Something happens, you see something, you deal with something, think it's fine, you move on. You suck it up, man. You just do not talk about it. And you'll bullshit about it with your friends and your coworkers, and you laugh it off. You make jokes and stuff.
There's actually I believe, I don't know if it's considered a medical term, but I'm sure it is, for behavior like that. It's called compartmentalization.
Yep.
And what you're doing is you're just, again, I'm not a medical professional. I'm not a psychotherapist. I just happen to hang out with a bunch of these motherfuckers all the time. Yeah. So I get to like really learn this stuff. And again, I obviously have spoken about my experiences with therapy and how I think it's really good for everybody. And I think that really one of the ideals or goals of going to therapy is to not have to go to therapy anymore. So, you know, you're working towards a goal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I'm dialing back quite a bit how much I've been in. I had life happen to me, which was a pretty serious circumstance, but nobody's absolved from life. And I tell people this, but what happens in compartmentalization, if you could imagine, is, and I'm just coming up with this off the cuff here. Imagine you have a storage space and it fits 100 boxes that are maybe a cubic foot each. Well, you keep putting boxes and boxes and boxes in. At some point, the thing don't fit any more boxes. You're taking all these situations and all these serious little mini traumas and traumas and just packing them away. You pack, pack, pack. Then all of a sudden you come to open the garage door to try to pack another one in there and they all come fucking falling out and pouring out and the thing's a goddamn mess. So you don't know how to deal with it. You have nowhere to put this stuff. What these therapists and counselors can help you do is not have to put these things away, deal with them. So you can say, we don't need to put them in this garage. You can deal with them. You don't need this stuff. Let's get rid of it. Keep the garage open.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect explanation. And all the stuff that I've been through, Heather and I have been going through peer trainings to hopefully be able to help other first responders here in the future. But that's exactly what I've learned, is that there's only so much that you can put in there. And then eventually it's just going to blow up on you. And then shit's going to really get worse.
And it's real. You know what's crazy about it, Mark, is like people don't realize like how real that is. And one thing that's interesting about it is you almost can't tell because people are so good at hiding it. It's like the suicide thing as well.
Yeah.
I just found out somebody that I'm really good friends with was like, yeah, I was in a really bad place at that time when I was with you. And I'm like, what, you were here like all the time? And they're like, yeah, yeah. I'm like, bro, I didn't even catch on to it. And you know, he was like, I was not well. And I'm like, holy
shit. I think
we've
gotten good at, I mean, that's human nature, but I think we've gotten even better at hiding that stuff. I don't know what it is specifically about law enforcement and first responders, but it's that Facebook life. Everything looks good, man, in Facebook and all the good things, and everybody can keep up with you, but they don't know truly what's happening. And even people close to you. And you said that, and man, a guy's name popped up in my head immediately that I was like, and he told me about something. I'm like, what the hell? I had no clue. And I should have known that, or I should have seen that. So that I am definitely learning that. And then like something else you said is that therapy and counseling they'll tell you this, it's not lifelong. You may come see me for a little while and then I won't see you. And then I may see you later down the road. It just depends. And that's how it's been for me. I've gone in and out, depending on what's going on in my life and with my traumas. The other thing is it's not just about our jobs. There may have been, you may have had trauma in your childhood, and through your life, even before becoming a first responder. And that's where I'm learning. I think I hid so many, I don't remember anything about my child. I mean, I remember little things about my childhood, but specific stuff that my brothers may bring up. I have an older and younger brother that may talk about, just when we were kids and stuff. And I'm like, man, I don't really remember that. And it makes me think, have I hidden stuff that far deep? Was there something that I went through that I didn't realize I had gone through or dealt with? And so that I'm learning those and starting to unpack that garage and hopefully handle that. And I've even been thinking about going back to counseling here recently, just, to make sure I'm not filling that garage back up. So, but you're, I mean, I think that's where Maya and Heather's heart's really leading with our foundation that we started through all this, but, is that we want to be available for more peers. When we started Young Cops going through, we're just now, and we're always behind. It seems like we're always behind, in as first responders, law enforcement specific, I can speak to in technology and this kind of stuff because of the cost. But we're also behind in taking care of our people. Our departments, our agencies are finally realizing the mental health side of our job and what effects we've had, and how do we keep these guys and gals mentally healthy, not physically healthy also, but mentally healthy, so they can continue to do the job and live a good life and have a good life and have a good family life. So, but we're still behind, man. We got a lot of catching up to do, and it's sad, but it's reality. So,
well, that's this leads us to the day of the event, what had occurred and what you went through.
June 9, 2020, it was a Tuesday. Went back in the office. We were going to catch up from being gone out of the office pretty much that whole week before leading up to everything. Literally went in, got my stuff started, went in and sat down with my sergeant. He was a couple offices down the hall and we just kind of bullshitted for a while. And then I looked at him and I said, I think I'm going to leave early. I think I'm going to retire early. I'm kind of had it. I could have here at our department with my retirement system, you can buy back prior law enforcement and I think military too, be prior law enforcement. So I had 3 years. I would still have to work a little while, but I could buy back. And I told him, I said, if I can afford it, I said, I'm buying back and I'm getting out. I said, I've just had enough. And I'm not even working the road, man. I'm working, I mean, probably 90 to 95% of my job at the time was office work and trainings and doing classes and teaching civilians and citizens. And I would go out with the unit on search warrants and stuff like that, but they were doing all the work. I mean, I was in the office 95% of the time. And that's where Heather will tell you, she goes, oh, he's no longer on the street. Now he's in an office. It's even safer. So anyways, we're bullshitting. I tell them that. And we talk about that for a while. I go back to my office. And I'm literally catching up on emails from being gone for a week or more. And where my office sits, I sit pretty much right behind our front desk records area. And it's in a supervisor hallway for patrol and some lieutenants were offices in there. So the people working the front desk, would a lot of times if there was something going on in the lobby or they had issues and patrol hadn't got there yet or responded, been called, they would come get me or another patrol sergeant or somebody that a cop to at least get started in handling it. So they had come back and I think they hit up my sergeant and then a very important person now, especially now in my life, Sergeant Heather Anderson. She was a patrol sergeant. She's a damn good supervisor, but her and I went through the academy together back in 99. So we knew each other pretty well. Never worked directly together, but knew each other well and she had moved up. So all three of us go outside, the records folks and the front desk people had said that there was a guy that had pissed on the front door. He had been out front, some kind of unknown disturbance. So we go out, lobby's empty, front doors area outside are empty. So we check the little parking area that's in front of headquarters and nothing. We don't see a person, a vehicle, nothing. So we go back in. I think I helped pull up some videos and to get for the patrol officers showing this guy pissing on the front door and went back to work. I don't know. 10 minutes later, after I went back to the office, here comes Sergeant Heather Anderson again. I can tell something was up. She was heading out to the lobby. So I just followed her out.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop Podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally, and we also entertain you as well.
And as we were walking out, I said, what's up? Well, he's been circling our headquarters, government plaza, where we're stationed at there, in a white SUV. So we both end up going out. I go out of the out front doors and turn left down towards the main road that's out in front of our headquarters, and she turns right towards more of the parking area and stuff. I literally walk out. We don't see anybody, don't see any white SUVs. I walk out to the edge of the street in our driveway that leads up to our parking area. And here comes a white SUV turning off of the next side street that borders our kind of our backside of headquarters. And so I start to walk back up and he's staying in the right turn lane. So I'm like, this has got to be it. Walk back up towards the front, main front of the parking areas for the front doors of the headquarters, holler at Heather, tell her, I think he's coming. And we had pretty good distance between us because it's a pretty long area. And so I move up into the parking spots in the parking area directly in front of headquarters. Well, of course, as things are now, you've got parking spots, then you've got sidewalk area with bollards to keep them from coming in. Then we had steps that led up to our front doors. So we had safety measures in place that a vehicle couldn't drive up. So I end up stepping into the parking areas. I think I even stepped up onto the sidewalk area off the curb. He comes pulling in, right, turns right into the driveway and starts to head towards the parking area. I step out, from what I remember, I step out into the parking spots and motion for him to turn away from me into those parking areas. And literally, as soon as he and I make eye contact, I see him, I see his face clear as day. And I see him grab the steering wheel and literally yank it in my direction, turning his wheels in my direction. And then all I hear is acceleration. And all I see is this huge white SUV coming at me. So I'm backpedaling in the parking spots and he's on me. Our distance was very little. I couldn't even tell you if I'm guessing maybe 30 feet, 40 feet at the most, maybe. I'm backpedaling. I see the front right corner of the SUV coming right at me. I remember touching the hood and I tried to pop myself up and away from it. And somehow I haven't watched, there's video course of it, really good video. I have not watched that yet. I may or may not. That's something we'll probably talk about. But anyway, somehow I end up underneath the SUV. He comes up over the curb and up onto the sidewalk and is accelerating and hits the bollard. Well, I'm now underneath, I'm pinned. From what I've been told and what I've gathered through some debrief and just talking to officers or people that have seen the video and then Heather that was directly there at the time, I'm pinned up underneath. My legs, at least one, if not both of my legs, are pinned up against my chest. So I've definitely got my thighs and my knees underneath me. I swear to God, I remember hearing at least two shots and I knew that it was gunfire. So I knew Heather was shooting him and shooting in his direction. She was closing the gap. After I learned that after the fact, obviously, but she closed that gap because he's still, even though he hits this bollard, he's still hitting the gas and accelerating and I'm stuck underneath this thing. So, and I think in her mind, after talking to her, she's afraid that he's going to maybe try to back up and do more damage and not because I was underneath the thing. So she shoots him and she hit him once in the left shoulder. That stopped him from accelerating and he was wounded. By then, I think another patrol officer was there from what I've been told. Anyways, they end up yanking him out. And the first thing I remember after I heard the shots and the acceleration stop is I see Heather poke her head underneath the front end of the thing, underneath the front end of the SUV looking for me. And I looked directly at her and I remember her yelling. Obviously, they were trying something about getting the vehicle off of me. But I told her, I said, I can't breathe. I was going out. I knew I was going out. Because my knees were pressed against my chest. So I knew I was at least passing out. And I felt I could feel that. And I don't know how long later. Anyways, they end up getting me in the SUV off of me and me out from underneath the SUV. And then from there, man, it's a blur. I thought I stayed conscious the entire time because I remember a lot of things. I remember the ambulance, I remember laying flat on my back. And then just all these faces and people that I knew, because of course it's out in front of headquarters, man. So everybody and their mother's there. Our government plaza houses some fire department people and fire marshals, a specific guy that I'll talk about, Mark Phillips, that was a cop with us. Our kids are, our oldest kids are the same age in the same school district. But he was a cop and then jumped over to the fire department. So we're friends. We know each other well. We live in the same community. I remember him being there, my chief, the fire chief who I knew. I mean, there was just so many detectives, commanders, so many faces that were cheering me on saying, "Hey man, we're here, stay awake." One guy I call him Boom. His name's Boom Garden is his last name. This dude is a giant. He's 7 foot. I don't even know. He's huge, huge, huge guy. He worked in the same unit as I did at the time. And he worked downtown out of the downtown office. And so he was close. He responded. He stayed with me, him and Phillips stayed with me, from the time they loaded me up to the hospital. And what Heather told me, I think Boom was still holding my hand. when she came into the ER room. So he never left my side. And, excuse me. And Phillips never left my side. So, man, it's been a while since I got emotional about stuff. Dang. I usually do pretty good. So sorry.
No, you don't have to be sorry. You're allowed to be emotional, yeah. Mark. It's perfectly fine. You've been through some really horrific shit. So you're more than entitled to feel the way that you feel.
Appreciate that. So I knew pretty quick that I couldn't move my legs. And I remember saying something about that. And I just knew I knew I couldn't move my legs. So they load me up pretty quick. And boom, we're off to the hospital, which wasn't super far away. I was in and out. So I remember messing with my phone, and I think I was trying to call Heather or text Heather, but I know boom, he would have it. And then I would take it. And I don't remember what I think. I was just trying to reach Heather and say, hey, I'm awake or whatever. But I've been hurt. That never happened, but I remember messing with my phone a bunch. So anyways, get to the hospital, and from there it gets pretty blurry. I remember Heather coming in at some point and just telling her that I was sorry. And she asked me why I was sorry. And I said, I can't move my legs. And then listening to her and talking to her after the fact, right about that same time, the ER doc told her that I had a severe spinal cord injury. It had been severed and I'd never walk again. So, spent, gosh, 10 days at our local hospital. And Heather, thank God for her. She's my lifesaver. Once she was told everything, of course, the kids get brought over there, family respond. My brother, older brother who lives in the area, he was actually a Springfield firefighter at the time. He responded. Our pastor that we had at the time, just everybody and their mother, you know, and it's COVID. So the hospital had a lot of restrictions on, and not anybody could just get in. But from talking to them, there was everybody, the cops were lying in the hallway, and they finally kicked them out after some point. So, but anyway, spent 10 days in the hospital. It's kind of a blur. I remember, sleeping a lot and realizing I had some pretty severe road rash. If I had some on the back of my head, but my back, because if you look at me from the front, other than my legs not working, you'd never know I just got run over. There was nothing facially injured or anything. I had some scrapes on my elbows and then pretty bad road rash on my back from getting drug underneath the vehicle and the cement. 10 days at that hospital. Through that process, of course, Heather's taken on everything. We have family that were helping with the kids. Back then they were Connor was 15 and Chloe would have been 9. So they were getting help. And then our friends, some really close, dear friends that were helping out with the kids and helping out Heather and stuff through that process. But from what she told me, basically somebody said, hey, Mark needs to go to Craig out in Colorado, Craig Hospital. I think it's Englewood, but it's a suburb of Denver, is a rehab hospital for spinal cord injury and traumatic brain injuries. So anyways, Heather figures all that stuff out, makes arrangements. They fly me out. 10 days later, it was the 18th, 18th of June. So get to Craig. I'm still having medical issues, like blood pressure issues. I had some kidney issues back then, they just had to keep eye on. I have a kidney disease that they had to keep an eye on. So, but I was having blood pressure issues and couldn't sit up much and dealing with all that. So I get out there, doctors start assessing everything and figuring out a kind of a plan, and spent right about 3 months out at Craig. And again, it's still COVID early on. So all the precautions and it wasn't the full, like things were before and now after COVID as far as access and things you could do. But man, I learned how to be independent with this new injury and learn how to still live and not have to depend on others to do normal everyday stuff that I was doing before. So thank God for that place and all the people, the doctors, my PT and OT people, the nursing staff was amazing. So, I mean, great, great place for that stuff. I got to, unfortunately got to meet Kansas young Kansas City cop out there that had been shot after either, I think right after my incident up in Kansas City, Missouri. And he had a TBI and we've kept in contact. Good kid, shitty situation for him. But it, luckily his department has stood by him and he's doing a lot of good things. Spent 3 months out there and then got shipped back home to a hotel because our house hadn't been done, had work comp was taking care of a lot of stuff and it was slow going to get some modifications that we needed done on the house for me to gain access and actually stay there. So I stayed in a, what they call a handicapped accessible, which we've learned through this injury that wheelchair accessible and handicapped accessible are two different things completely. But spent, gosh, I came back in September and just before Christmas, I was able to get in back in the home and where I'm staying at home with the kids and Heather. So it's been a journey the whole time, learning this new life, learning it together, having emotional and frustrating moments. I still get frustrated a lot when I can't do things or things aren't going how they would normally if I had two working legs. So, in the last 2.5 years, almost 3 years now, dealing with that, going through work comp, not long after I'd been home, I had been a year since I had been to my kidney doctor, my nephrologist. I was doing, getting all my checkups and getting back into that stuff. And I went in and saw them and everything looked good. And then, within about 2 to 3 months, I went back for another follow-up and my kidney function had, dropped significantly to the point where they're like, "Hey, you're going to need a kidney transplant and we're going to have to put you on dialysis." I was like, "What the hell?" And we had been doing, I left a big part out. So prior to my injury, Heather had been diagnosed with a cancer and a cancer that's not curable, but it's treatable. And so we dealt with that. We're dealing with that, got in a really good place with her. She was still going through treatments and stuff because she had to go back and forth for chemo and stuff while I was out in Colorado. And, but anyways, we were doing good. We were getting settled in, kind of getting in a groove with my new way of life, still learning, but we were doing okay. Heather was doing well medically with her cancer. And then, "Hey, Mark, now you have to go on dialysis and you need a kidney. Your kidney went to shit." So I was like, "What, man, what else? What else? Okay. What's going to happen next? What the fuck?" That was kind of a blow. But we, just like everything else, and what Heather will say is that we take those and we keep rolling forward. And so we started dealing with it. I got, went in and had to have a PD catheter inserted in my stomach so I could do, dialysis at home overnight. Thank God, not have to go to a place and stay there all day long, but, start that process. And, we started looking for live donors. You know, that's kind of was our focus. So all Heather put that information out. Our prayers for Facebook prayers for preview page had been started by my sister-in-law when I was originally injured, so everybody could get up. They could put updates on there. So that thing had gone nationwide by the time I was out at Craig and with my story and our story. So they put that information out. My family, we had friends, coworkers, people we didn't know that were getting tested to see if they'd be a match for me. In that process, we were early on in the stage. You know, I was doing my dialysis every night. September. September the 16th. Young, brand new officer still on field training, Blaze Madrid Evans. Uh, 22, on field training, Independence, Missouri, 2.5 hours away from where I'm at, just outside of Kansas City. Get shot and killed on a call, on a check person call, check for a warrant. gets shot and killed. Well, this kid had been in EMS just prior to that, wanted to be a cop and was doing well, but hadn't even got released off field training yet. Gets shot and killed. Well, lo and behold, this kid, another one of my heroes, is an organ donor. And somebody in my department who used to be up in the Kansas City area as law enforcement that I knew real well, knew some Independence guys. And I think somehow, I still don't know the exact story, but an Independence cop or somebody that worked for Independence PD reached out to him saying, hey, does Preby still need a kidney? So he contacted me. I'm like, yeah, I do. I still need a kidney. And I had been following Blaze's story, especially when they're state and that close. I usually know what's going on. I pay attention to the stories. So I knew about Blaze. He says, well, here's the deal. We want to see if you guys can get tested, see if you're a match. So I'm like, okay. Kind of put me back. And that process started that day. I think that was the 16th of September. But anyways, I literally had just got ready to call my pre-transplant contact. And we were going through St. Louis University Hospital, SLU, for my stuff when it came to transplant. And I said, hey, I had a question. She asked me when she answered, she goes, were your ears burning? I'm like, no. And she said, well, we were just talking about you. And I said, well, does it have to do with this? And talked about Blaze and his incident. She said, yes. So she said, we're going to start the process of getting you guys tested, seeing if you're a match. Stay by your phone. If we need you to come, can you come pretty quick? I'm like, yeah, I mean, we're 3 hours away, but yes, we'll come. So that started early in the morning that day. Heather and I were actually home together that full day. I wasn't working or anything, still going through different therapy and different stuff and not working, obviously. So go through the day, do our normal day, nothing. We both go to bed. It was just before midnight, and then nothing because we're nervous wrecks. And I had kind of, it was kind of a hard thing for me. I was still processing that this young cop had been killed in the line of duty. It was a hero to his community doing his job. And now they're looking at giving me a kidney. So they went to his mom and said, hey, if they're a match, would you be willing to do what they call a direct donation? And she didn't know about my story. They told her about my story. Independence did. And she said, absolutely. So number three hero outside, actually four. My wife's my first hero, but so anyways, they start the process a little after midnight, which had been on the 17th. We get a phone call from my pre-transplant coordinator, and she says, can you be in St. Louis by 7 a.m.? We're like, yeah. She goes, you guys are a perfect match. And I was like, holy crap. I mean, I'm 40, in my mid-40s. This kid's 22, healthier than all out, that just sacrificed his life for some dirt bag. That wasn't worth a shit. So anyways, so Heather starts packing us up, calls her parents to come take care of the kids. And she packs us up for as much as we can think we can get, together for how long we're going to have to be up there. Cause you have to stay for quite a long time after the transplant, you have to stay in a hotel even after you get out of the hospital. So anyways, we shoot up there. We're up there early that morning. And just start the process. And by the evening of the 18th, that it was a Saturday, I think, September 18th, I go in for transplant, and I wake up with a new kidney that, according to my kidney doctors and the transplant team, is one of the healthiest kidneys that they've ever seen, and is healthier than even their kidneys. Which has made a huge difference physically in my life. Obviously, I have the new kidney, and my kidney function is amazing, and my systems are getting back to normal pretty quick. So we go through that. We're up in St. Louis because I had some blood clots in my legs and stuff, and I had to do a couple operations and dealing with that as I was in and out of the hospital up there. Anyways, probably about a month later, Heather and I end up coming home, still healing from the surgery and going through that. So that from there, man, things have been good. Heather and I haven't been back to work until just this year, January of this year, but I started asking, okay, what's next steps with retirement and this and that, trying to figure all that stuff out. So I unfortunately kind of sat around for about 2.5 years, not doing much, going to doctor's appointments, trying to do things at the kids' school when I could. But I spent a lot of time by myself, which, and not keeping my brain active, which is probably one of the worst things, that I could do, mentally for myself. So, and going through some therapies, I went through therapy off and on in that 2.5, almost 3 years now, just trying to get better at dealing with things. Cause I'd have some pretty frustrating days, and like I tell everybody, man, unless you know somebody that has a spinal cord injury, when it comes to all the things that they go through and deal with, you don't know. And so we're pretty open about stuff. If anybody has questions, we answer them. Be it if it's about my bowel movements and how I do all that stuff, to wheelchair use and transferring and all that. So we've taken on some of that. We've started getting some peer training here through our different agencies and trying to be a help to other first responders. We decided to start our Preby Strong Foundation through a run that was started to benefit us. And we're doing that every year, trying to benefit first responders that are seriously injured in the line of duty here, and specifically in Southwest Missouri. So we're still in the early stages for that too, but we're trying to give back, man. Our community, people from all over the U.S. have stepped up and prayed for us, have sent cards, have sent gifts from day one. I still get cards every once in a while, a few cards from the same people just saying, we're praying for you. So we have been very, very fortunate that we live in a community and we have what Heather will call a silent majority that support law enforcement all over the United States, and specifically here in Missouri. And they're still there. So we really felt led to find ways to give back to our community and specifically to our first responders. You know, the Springfield Police Officers Association that I'm part of through our department has stepped up and helped us. And we've got friends and family here locally that have done everything and anything that we needed. So we're very, very fortunate. I just started, retired in December of 2022, or sorry, January of 2023. And then with a week later, I started at our Republic School District, which is a town that borders Springfield, where we live and my kids go to school. And started with their school police as a security consultant, or security coordinators, actually, is my title. So I'm trying to figure that out and getting back to work and getting my mind active again. And things are going pretty good. So I'm very fortunate.
Well, that's good to hear. I know that your wife and kids have been through a lot. They've supported you. I'm glad they're working through things as well. And, you know, well, the first thing I'm going to ask you is this: what happened to the guy? The guy.
So,
what was the end up? What was the final deal with that?
There's no final with him yet. So he was deemed mentally incompetent. So they sent him to our Department of Mental Health through our prison department or our prison system. So he's up in the Department of Mental Health, locked up. He's gotten better over this 2.5 years to the point where he understands his charges, but psychologist or psychiatrist has deemed him with some kind of mental disease and incompetent. And then I think his defense attorney also had one, and they found the same thing. So our prosecutor is working on trying to figure out, we're supposed to go back in April, is working to find out, to determine if they're going to pursue charges. If they do, he's going to most likely, from what we understand, he'll plead innocent due to his mental defect, and he'll figure out from there if they're going to push it and try to fight it and go through trial, or if he's just going to stay in the Department of Mental Health for however long they deem necessary until if and when he's capable of being released. So it's still,
how does it make you feel?
I from get-go, I haven't given him a lot of thought, but this last 6 months because we got some final finality to what could or couldn't happen. It pisses me off, but I really made a conscious decision not to give him that mental space to affect me for the most part. I think it still will, and it still does to some point, but it pisses me off. And I understand he may have, he definitely has a mental issue. There's no doubt. I have no doubt. This man texted somebody, our investigators found on his phone, that he texted that day that he ran over me, that he was going to run over a cop. He didn't kill me. He didn't say he was going to kill a cop. He said he was going to run over a cop, and he ran over a cop. So he did. He knew ahead of time what he was going to do. He intentionally came to the police department, drove around 16, 18 times. I don't know how many times around looking for a cop, sat out in front of the police department for quite a long time, trying to see if he'd see a cop. So he obviously knew enough, even if he's paranoid about the government and law enforcement, he put himself in a place to injure another person, be it a civilian or a cop, law enforcement. So for me, he needs to pay for that, and he needs to be locked up, and he needs to stay locked up. So I don't know what's going to happen. I'll be honest. I don't have a lot of faith in our justice system, period. We're very fortunate still here in Southwest Missouri for the most part. We have pretty conservative prosecutors, and we don't deal with a lot of the stuff our bigger cities deal with on the liberal side. And they do everything they can to stand behind their law enforcement. And I know that our guys are doing everything that they can to make sure he's punished in some form or fashion. So,
as crazy of a question as this may appear, I am going to ask it, and I'm curious of an answer to it. This thing is obviously, in and of itself, just a horrific turn of events, life-changing, life-altering, a lot of stuff for everybody to go through, really uncalled for, never needed to happen. I think all those things have been acknowledged. But were there any blessings in disguise that came out of this incident?
Yeah, I'm still married. I still have my family. What happened to me at work gave me a second chance to be a better husband, a better dad, a better person, and still make an impact in some form or fashion. I should have been dead that day. There's no doubt in my mind. I shouldn't be here talking to you. So I know there's more purpose for me. I don't know. I'm starting to learn some of that purpose, like we've talked about. But there's obviously more for me to do and to be a part of, I hope. But so I'm still working on being better with my kids, my wife, and a better human. But I think if you ask my family now compared to how I was pre-injury, I'm a lot better with them. They're glad I'm around. They want to be around me most of the time. So that's number one. Third chance was the kidney, because that could have been a big deal for me in not surviving again. So Blaze and the direct donation from his mom, it's amazing. He'll always be part of my life, obviously physically, but his family, they are family. We've got to know them, some of them, and they are family. And they will always be part of our blue family too, obviously. So I'm just fortunate all the way around, man. I mean, does life suck some days? Hell yeah. I get pissed off because I'm in this fucking chair and I can't go get in and out of my car or van as quick as I want to, or go to the bathroom as quick as I want to. I can't do things like I used to do. So there are more frustrating days that I have for sure. But man, it could be a lot worse. And that's early on. We saw people that were injured at the rehab hospital that were quads, that were in power chairs. I have my upper body compared. So there's always somebody worse. That's kind of how we try to look at it 99% of the time.
This is my final question. I think it's an important question. I think you're going to answer it well. What are you thankful for?
I'm thankful for my family. I'm thankful for my wife, Heather. She has taken on so much. When she was already dealing with so much, and her cancer, and literally taking on a whole nother job and being a caretaker and a caregiver, and taking on more that stuff that I used to do or could do that I can't do now. And my son, Connor, he has stepped up. Both of my kids have stepped up and unfortunately had to grow up a lot quicker than you want them to. But when your son has to wipe your ass because you have an accident, or your wife has to, that's pretty demeaning and pretty, it'll break down a lot of ego, I guess, pride. And when they have to do that and they don't complain about it, I mean, so I, number one, my family, my wife, my kids, Heather's parents, we lost her dad last year, but, and her, and my sister-in-law and her husband, man, they have all stepped up. My brothers, my young brother was out in Colorado with me a couple of times when Heather had to go home. He stepped up on a whim and came out from Idaho to be with me. So I wasn't alone. My older brother here has stepped up and his family to do so much to help us. Coworkers, some of our close friends. So I'm definitely thankful for that. Thankful for my boss here where I've got, they've been so giving to help me get back on my feet, literally to get back into work and doing things. So in our communities, man, the Republic and Springfield area have just stood behind us and supported us since day one. And I couldn't ask for anything more.
How do you see life now?
A lot more positive. That's a pretty negative person. And I still struggle with that, but I mean, a lot more positive. Heather and Connor are close friends to tell you I'm pretty boring. So still trying to open up and be a little more fun.
You know, I'm thankful that you came on and shared your story today. It's a daunting story, but I'm really looking forward to meeting you guys in Nashville in about 5 weeks away, something like that.
Yeah, man, we're excited. It's going to be a good trip and we're looking forward to meet you guys in person and have a good time. So
we're going to have a good time. I promise you. I don't disappoint. Absolutely. Your boy here is the master of ceremonies. You're going to fucking love it.
Awesome. That sounds good.
All right, brother. Listen, I appreciate your time and thanks for being here on behalf of everything. People learned a lot of stuff from it today.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate you guys.
All right, Mark, I'll see you, buddy.
All right, take care.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.